I don't know about you guys, but today I feel good. You know, there's in my home group, Newber, and my other home group is Big Book Study. We have a man that gets up, Carrie's here tonight, every week, and he says, today I feel good. And I just love it. I just love to hear it. My name is Ruth Arnoff. You left off the Easton, but that's okay. And I'm a real alcoholic. For the grace of God and the Big Book, the 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, the Four Absolutes, my two sponsors, Beth Gordon and Marlene Sigler. I'm so grateful to be here. These 38 years, I can't even believe I've lived them. You know, I was listening to the lead last night. She was awesome. And Roberta said about this being the greatest show on earth. And then I started thinking about the circus, and it's something that I had heard. The monkey is off our back, but the circus is still in town. So I'm not perfect either. Whenever my thinking gets stinking, that's when the circus comes to town. You know, I read something on the internet. I saw it there, and it just describes me to a T. Life is not a journey to the grave with the intention of arriving safely in a pretty and well-preserved body, but rather to skid in broadside, thoroughly used up, totally worn out, and loudly proclaiming, wow, what a ride. And that's what it has been for me. It has been such a wonderful ride. Even with things that have happened in my life, the ride has been awesome. I don't know how grateful I am today. How grateful can I be? How grateful can any of us be? When Dolly, and bless her heart, she's fantastic. When Dolly was reading the 24-hour book, I think of what I always tell my new girls and everyone to read every single day, and it's January 6th in the 24-hour book, and I'm going to read it, especially for the new people. Keeping sober is the most important thing in my life. The most important decision I ever made was my decision to give up drinking. I am convinced that my whole life depends on not taking that first drink. Nothing in the world is as important to me as my own sobriety. Everything I have, my whole life, depends on that one thing. Can I afford to ever forget this, even for 1 minute? And this part I love. I will discipline myself, because I believe this is a program of discipline, of, you know, working out. Getting up every day, reading our 24-hour book, talking to our sponsor, and it sets my day off right anyway. I know that the goodness of my life is a necessary foundation for its usefulness. And I left out one sentence. I will turn out all useless thoughts. And you guys know what the useless thoughts are. When we start dwelling in the past, which is history, or in the future, which is hasn't come yet. Father John used to say, the past is history, and the future is a promissory note, but today is cash. You know, spend it wisely. So without it, God cannot give me his power. I believe this is a power that is used my power when it's used in the right way. I pray that I may face and accept whatever discipline is necessary. I pray that I may be fit to receive God's power in my life. And I like to start out my lead with today, because today is the most important day of my life and yours too. What we do today will determine our tomorrows. You know, if I waste my day doing nothing and dwelling on negative thoughts, which is self-will, there are two wills, God's will and self-will. If I start doing that, then I'm in problems. Is it okay? Oh, okay. I take a little drink here. Water. And today I was blessed to be able to have my lovely sponsee, Jackie, here, and to be with one of my other sponsees, Marcia, who's going to have 25 years. And she's not only my sponsee, but one of my dearest, dearest friends. And this is what we have here, you know. We're so blessed, and I feel so blessed to even be here today. I really believe that if God told us, or a doctor told us, that we were going to die in 2 weeks, that we would forget every bit of problems that we have today and think of life itself. Because that's what I have to do every morning, is turn out that ego in me. You know, I have to be grateful that I'm even alive, that I'm breathing. We don't think about things like that. You know, just jump out of bed and go to it or whatever. But I have to wake up like that and ease God at ease. You know, I sometimes try to ease God out, but I have to ease out my ego and not my higher power, to accept my higher power in my life. It wasn't always like that, believe me. When I was drinking, I thought that I needed alcohol to do anything that I did in my life. I thought I needed it to function, to act normally, and I thought I was acting normally. I was living in a beautiful house in a lovely neighborhood, had the children, had everything I wanted, vacations, and yet inside I kept saying to myself, I was so unhappy. All I really wanted, and I think about this often, is I wanted peace. I just wanted to feel good inside. I was always, everything out there was happening wrong. My husband didn't love me like I wanted him to love me. My children didn't obey me like I wanted them to. And I didn't like myself at all. But yet I was running crazy. You know, I was president of PTA. I was running around just escaping myself and drinking the whole time. In fact, I remember going to the liquor store, and the woman at the liquor store said, Mrs. Arnoff, you can charge it because you're such a good customer. And I was so mad that I went to another liquor store. And, I mean, I did crazy things. Like, I remember putting money in the bank. My husband was a college professor. This is my first husband. I'm on my third now, who is the love of my life, Wayne. He's in the program also. I remember taking money from his royalty checks. He was writing books, and I would open up bank accounts at different banks because they used to give prizes, you know, you know, fry pans and different things like that. And so I would start, and so one time I opened up an account in my dog's name. I had a toy poodle, and her name was Lady Kip. And I put it in Lady Kip Arnoff, and I put myself as a beneficiary on all this because I figured if the dog died, I'd get the money. I mean, talking about insanity. Oh my gosh. And humor, I think about Roberta last night, and I think about humor. Humor is our best friend. Anger is our worst enemy. And I was one of these people who was so angry, and I took it out at home on everybody around me. They never knew who I was going to be, which personality, if I was going to be nice or I was going to be crazy. And my husband used to make notes on me. And I remember when I first came into the program, I was in about 3 or 4 years, and we were to lead at Punderson. He was given the Al-Anon lead, and I was giving the AA lead at the Punderson conference. And he said, when he got up, he said, "I'm going to title this The Demise of Melvin Arnoff." And I thought, demise? And he called me the demiser and said about how he used to go to sleep at night and think that I was going to kill him. And I thought to myself, how did he know? So, you know, he was unbelievable. And he was going to put me in an institution because he thought I was having a breakdown. And here I was with this beautiful swimming pool, and I couldn't swim. And I was lying on a raft on this pool drinking my vodka every day. I had one glass at each end of it. And I thought to myself, maybe I ought to just go drown in this pool. But I didn't. Somehow or other, I was just floating along. I was out there every single day. And so after that, I remember my husband seeing me drinking in the kitchen, and because I had all these dark-colored glasses, and I would keep straight vodka in them. And he would think, I thought he would think I was drinking pop or something, or Coke, or, you know, and here it was all filled with vodka. And I said to him, he says, "Let me see what you're drinking." And he took a taste of it. And I said, "Well, if you really love me," I said, "I would throw it away." And he didn't say a word. So I thought, aha, he doesn't really love me. And so that next day, I remember going out in my car, and I started driving over the bridge at 271. I was already planning. I was going to go right off this bridge and land on my nose, you know, the car on its nose, and that I would be dead. And then everyone would come and cry at my funeral and say, "My poor dear mother, look what we did to her." So here I am driving that car, and I'm just about to go onto the bridge, and I had the radio was already on in the car, and I hear these questions like they're on the Who Me, and I kept answering yes, 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 and I thought, oh my God, that's what's wrong with me. I'm an alcoholic. I'm not crazy, because I knew there was something terribly wrong. I was so many different personalities. You never knew who I was going to be. And so I turned around and I went home, and I was so excited to know what was wrong with me. And I called my husband up and I told him, I said, "You know what, I'm an alcoholic," and he dead silence. And he said, I said, "Well, I don't know what to do about it." And he said, "Do what you want." And I hung up that phone and I called my neighbor about four doors down. And I told her, I said, "Libby," I said, "I think I'm an alcoholic. I heard this program and I was answering these questions, and I didn't know any other alcoholics. I was raised Jewish Orthodox and I didn't know anything about alcoholism." And so this woman said to me, "I knew you were an alcoholic." And I said, "How do you know?" And she says, "Well, I would come in your house to see you at times, and there you were lying on the floor in your laundry room." She said, "I told your husband that you were drunk, and he just threw me out of the house." And I said, "Well, I don't know what to do." And by this time, I was crying because I didn't know where to go, what to do. And she says, "I want you to go to my doctor." And I went to her doctor, and thank God, you know, God was there. Because when I went to this doctor and I told him what was going on with me, he said, "You have to go to Alcoholics Anonymous." And he said, I said, oh, I can't go there. You know, I'm in high society. I'm living in, you know, this nice, beautiful home, and I can't go where there's, I said, the only thing I know about alcoholics about it, they're under the bridge or something like that. And he said, well, go there. And he said, stay there at least 6 months, and something may happen to you, and you may like it. And I said, how do I get a hold of them? And he said, go home and look it up in the phone book. So I did, just like that. I went into my phone book, and I found Alcoholics Anonymous. I called, and this wonderful man named Dick Perez answered. And I didn't say to him, you know, I have a friend who's drinking who needs help. I said it was me. And I said, I don't know what to do. And he said, we're going to send someone to you. And they sent over this beautiful lady named Pat. And I'll never forget her. God rest her soul. She's up on that big cloud up there. She came to my house, and she was so happy. She was smiling, and she looked good. And I thought, how could she be an alcoholic? You know, she has to be miserable. And she wasn't. And she took me to my first meeting. And that's where I saw so many people who were so good to me. I couldn't believe it, the love that I got at that meeting. People were hugging me and saying, come back. And I couldn't understand it. Why were they doing this? They don't know me. And I thought, I don't want anybody to know my last name. I was very anonymous, like some famous movie star or something. I don't know what I thought. This meeting, in fact, Dolly talked about it. This man came up to me and said, just what you said, come and let us love you until you can love yourself. And that hit me because I didn't love myself. My husband told me he hated me. My children were just, didn't even want to be around me. They wouldn't bring anybody home because I was always drunk. And I was just like at my bottom. And I was so happy to find that meeting. And so my sponsor says to me, you have to go to a meeting every day and you have to call me every day. And I was willing. I didn't know not to because I was so miserable that I was searching for something so I would feel better. As I said, I wanted that peace, that wonderful feeling inside. And so I went with my sponsor the first 2 weeks to meetings, and then she says to me, you're on your own. And I got so scared. And one time I went to a meeting, and there was no meeting there, and I called her hysterical, and she'd say, come to my house. So I would go to my sponsor's house every day, and I'd go at dinner time because everybody was fighting at my house at dinner time. Oh, the kids were fighting, and they were into all kinds of trouble. I have three boys. And so I would go there and sit in her kitchen while they were eating in the dining room, and she had this meditation wall. And I have one in my house where she had all these plaques. And I would sit there and read these plaques, and they just filled me up. And that put me at peace. So I went to all these meetings, and about 6 weeks later, I thought I wanted to drink. It started coming into my mind, and I didn't know what to do about it. So I went to a meeting, and someone said at this meeting, you're as sick as the secrets you keep. And I started thinking, oh, yeah, I have a lot of secrets. So I went to my sponsor, and I said to her, you know, I said, I think I need to go somewhere or something. I said, I heard about this Rosary Hall at St. Vincent's Charity Hospital, and maybe I should check in there. And she says, well, I'll take you down there. And I went down there and met this other beautiful lady named Jane Mazzarella, who later started Women's General Hospital, and I used to speak there. But she was my counselor. And I said to her, you know, I said, I've been going to these meetings, and I'm shaking apart. I'm not happy. The only time I was feeling good at all is when I was at the meetings, because everyone was loving me. I was either laughing or crying. You could find me either way. I was like one way or the other way at the meetings. And my sponsor used to tell me, if you want to meet more people, sit there and cry. And I remember going to this Brainerd women's meeting, and they were all knitting and stuff like that. And I said to her, I called her up, and I said, nobody talks to me. I said, I'm at this meeting all alone. And she says, dummy, she says, go up to them and start talking. I said, oh, that's a good idea. So I started doing that. Anyway, I said to this Jane, I said, I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous for 6 weeks, and I still feel miserable. And I'm sober, but I'm miserable. She says, you're not sober, you're dry. And I said, what's the difference? And she says, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, can I please come to the treatment center and be there? Because it was only a 2-week program. And my sponsor made me quit all my organizations. I wrote letters. She told me I'm to just concentrate on Alcoholics Anonymous and to get myself sober and not do anything else. So the next day I checked into Rosary Hall, and I had a brown paper bag, because that's how I felt. I didn't have a suitcase or anything. And the women, when they saw me and they heard where I was from, they said to me, what are you doing here? You have all the things that we want. And that's why we're drinking. We don't have what you have. We don't have vacations. We don't have money. We don't have this. We don't have that. And I said, you don't understand. I said, what I've lost is what's in here. I felt like I was in a jail. Like, I mean, I didn't have to be in a jail. I was in a jail in this beautiful house, and I put myself right in that prison. And I didn't know how to get out. Well, here I am in Rosary Hall, and then I get another sponsor whose name is Lee, was Lee. And I don't know where she is today, but she was tough. She would come there, and she'd point her finger in my chest, and she says, you make notes. She says, every time you go to meeting, you make notes, and you do what I'm going to tell you to do. And I said, you know what? I said, I need to move out of my room. And she said, why? And I said, this girl is in my room, and she's shaking like a leaf, and I can't stand it. I said, she's shaking when she's eating. She's shaking when she's sleeping. She's shaking all the time, and it makes me a nervous wreck, and I'm nervous to begin with. So she said to me, she said, bloom where you are planted. And I said, what? And she said, you're supposed to be where you are, and you stay there. And she says, in fact, she said, tomorrow I want you to follow this girl around. I didn't know you could fire a sponsor. I would never do that. I didn't know. I thought whatever she said I had to do, because I didn't want to go back to that where I was. And so I started following this girl around. And where did she go? She went into the meditation room. And I was sitting in the back of the meditation room with my little 24-hour book. And she started praying. She was on her knees praying. And I opened this book, I think it was July 4th or 5th, and it said, ask God to be your friend. And I thought, you know, I never saw him as my friend. I always saw him as being up there, looking down, who's going to live, who's going to die, and all that kind of stuff. That's how I saw God. And that day I was sitting there, and I thought, that's really something. That would be nice if I had a friend like that who I could trust and go to. And I looked up, And that girl who was shaking was no longer shaking. And when I think of it today, I start getting goosebumps, because I realize that that's what that big book is talking about. You know, powerless. I'm powerless. And the shaking stopped when she got the power, when she was praying. And I knew that that was the answer. And I can't tell you how I felt. Something came over me that day, and I accepted God into my life. And you know, ladies, He's been there with me all these years. He never leaves me. He's always with me. Sometimes I've tried to walk away from Him, and then I have to go running back. But He's always here. There's, with me, there's like an exciting certainty that no matter what happens in my life, that He's going to take care of me. I have that much faith. But you know, so my sponsor, the tough one, came the next day. And she says, well, did you follow the girl around? And I said, you know what happened to me today? I found God. And I learned later that that was a spiritual experience. The spiritual awakening is a result of the steps, but I had a spiritual experience, and I didn't even know it. And so I'm telling her how I found God, and she says, that's nice. Now it's time to go on to step 4 and 5. I said, what? Because I didn't want to touch 4 and 5. I said, let me get to know God better, you know. Let me hang around with Him a little, and I'll do it later. And she said, no, you do it now. So, as I said, I did what my sponsor said. I started writing. I wrote the Hazelden guide to 4-step. I did the Rosary Hall guide. I did the 7 deadly sins, the 10 commandments. Anything else there was, you know, I was going to do all these different things, and I was going to do, being like a perfectionist, I was going to do a perfect job, see? And so I started writing, and I wrote 3 books, Phil. And my roommate said to me, what the heck is the matter with you? What are you writing? And I was crying and carrying on. And she says, "What? Who hurt you? What's going on with you?" And I said, I don't know. Yeah, I didn't know what was going on. But I was writing and following these guides. And so then I go the next day to Father John. Oh, this was maybe a few days later. It took me a few days to do all this writing. And Father John said, you wrote 3 books, Phil. I don't have time to hear all that. He says, go to Father Tolley. And I thought, you know, if my mother, the Orthodox Jewish, knew that I was in this Catholic hospital with the crosses and all that on the walls, and if she knew I was going to do a 4th and 5th step with a priest, she would just roll. I mean, she would just go crazy. I never told my mother till I was over a year sober. But anyway, I went to Father Tolley, and he said the most beautiful thing to me after he said, tell me, you know, about it. And I told him all of my 4th and 5th step. And he said, you don't have to be the person you used to be. You are free to become the person you always wanted to be. And I thought, that sounds really great. And I said, how do I do that? And he says, find gurus. He said, find people in the program and out of the program who have qualities that you like. He said, stick by them. You know, like stick with the winners. He says, stick by these people. And you too will start picking up some of these things. You don't have to be like them, but follow them. And I used to follow around the long timers. I don't like old timers. Long. So I used to follow around these long timers, and I would see them going through deaths. I'd see them going through divorces, all kinds of stuff. And they got through it. And I would always say to them, how did you do that? And they say, I prayed, I did this, I did that. And that's what sort of was helping me all along the way. So after I left Rosary Hall and I went home, things were still the same at home. Because you know what? They were still sick. You know, this is a family illness. And my children were sick. My husband was sick. And I had a program. They didn't. Okay, that was the difference. So I had to keep working my program and let them have their program. In fact, I let my husband, I kept telling him, because my kids did all kinds of crazy things, I'd say to him, you be in charge of the discipline. And I had to let go of a lot of things in the house because I wanted my sobriety and I wanted my peace of mind. And whenever I was in my house, it was like one big tumult. It was just terrible. So I went running to meetings all the time. And I was sober about 5 years. And the marriage wasn't getting any better. It was getting worse. And I said to my husband, I never thought I could do this, but I think I can live without you. I said, I want a divorce. And he didn't want a divorce. He wanted to stay in this marriage. And I don't want to tell you the circumstances of it because it's a private affair. But anyway, we did get a divorce, and I remember the day of the divorce. I was to lead that night, and I went and I decorated my car with tin cans and just divorce, a great big sign, and I drove all through downtown and honking, and everybody was honking, saying, yay, yay, you know. And that's what I did. And then going on, I was leading all over, and all of a sudden I was like about 13. Well, I want to go back to my mother again. Oh my gosh, when I was sober about a year, I told my mother, and she went crazy. She says, "Where do you meet?" And I said, "In churches." She said, "Churches? You go in a church?" And she says, no, you must meet in gasoline stations, because she didn't know. Then I had this man over for dinner, and my mother was there, and his name was Eddie Gordon. He's long deceased. And she says to him, and how much time do you have? She always called it A&A, in A&A. And he said, 20 years. And she said, do you still go to those meetings? And he says, yes. She says, didn't you get it yet? I was very fortunate. My mother lived a pretty long life, and she died of natural causes at 95. And I was very fortunate that, I mean, my mother and I never got along. And toward the end, we had a wonderful relationship, because whenever I was drunk, I would always call her, and she'd say, what happened now? I always had some kind of tragedy to tell her. You know, everything was a big tragedy with me. And I remember my friend Ro Eugene used to say to me, it's just unfortunate, you know, it's no big tragedy. And I would make something out of nothing. I was real dramatic. I remember that one. So anyway, when I was about 13 years sober, I started getting really sick. And to make a long story short, I had autoimmune hepatitis, and I was dying. I had like 60 pounds of water. I was jaundiced, and it wasn't from the drinking. I was already 12, 13 years sober, and they didn't know what it was from, and I had food poisoning, and I had the 1 week I had food poisoning, and then I had a virus, and I got a flu shot, and my body rejected my liver. And I was in bed, and guess who was taking care of me? I was in between husbands. And, you know, the AAs were there. They were taking care of me. They couldn't stand to look at me because I looked so horrible. I had that big face because I was on like 200 milligrams of prednisone a day. I mean, you know, it was just terrible. I was on such large doses of all kinds of drugs. And I found this doctor at the Cleveland Clinic who actually saved my life. They were going to do a liver transplant on me. And I ended up at the Cleveland Clinic, and this doctor said, you're going to be evaluated for a transplant. And they brought in a psychiatrist, and I had no energy, I couldn't move. And the psychiatrist said, you know, when people are dying, he said to me, It's really sad. He says they feel all alone. And I said, I don't feel alone at all. I said, because I know that everybody's praying for me. They were praying for me at all the meetings. And this man came in my room, and I found out just maybe 2 years ago that he was a doctor at the clinic. And he said, I've gone to 45 meetings in 45 days. He said, I'm new in the program. And he said, they sent me here. They told me that you might have something to tell me that was profound. And I said, just don't drink, go to meetings and pray. Real profound. And, you know, he told me how everyone was praying for me. And I felt so engrossed by God. And I felt like so loved. Somehow or other, my body took back my liver. Whatever happened, I didn't have to have the transplant because they said I was so far gone. And I started healing. And it was such a miracle in my life. And when you have a near-death experience like that, it changes your whole perspective in life. And I became even closer to my higher power. I remember saying that third step prayer. And I do that third step prayer before everything I do. That prayer is very important to me. And I made it through that. The next thing that happened was I had a wonderful, my youngest son, Kenny, got cancer. And he was so very ill for a whole year. The last, before he died, he was 52 days in Cleveland Clinic. And then I put him in a hospice of the Western Reserve because I wanted him to be in a beautiful place when he died that was filled with love. He was so very sick. And that was at the time when people would say to me, you know, your children, everyone in your home, anyone you know, they're all God's children. You don't own anything. You don't own anyone. And they were helping me to let go of him. And I remember going home from that hospital every day crying because he was addicted to drugs. And they would give him the biggest dose of drugs, and then he was still so addicted they couldn't raise the level high enough, so they had to take the drugs away from him for a day or so to get him down again so they could give him more stuff. And he was in so much pain, I don't even want to describe it. And it just broke my heart watching my son die. And I had all of you, and I had my higher power to get me through it. You know, he's in good hands now. He isn't suffering anymore. He's up there with my mother, And I'm telling you, he was such a handful, Kenny was, that I said, you know, God is so busy up there. He has nothing else to do but be with my mother and my son. And I don't have to worry about him coming for me because he's not ready for me yet. And my sponsor, Beth, always says, when you go to that big meeting in the sky, you have to start as a new person. I said, what? But anyway, excuse me. It has been a wonderful ride. After that, I met my wonderful husband, Wayne, and my other two children. My one son I have one grandson, and he's the light of my life. I just love him so much. I go to meetings regularly. I sponsor so many people. I used to sponsor like 5-6 at once, and I'm a real tough sponsor, believe me, because I take this program seriously. You know, you can either we were talking about it today, go to a mental hospital. You could go to jail. You could die, or you could accept this program. And my gosh, there's no other way to go. So the last story I have to tell you, and this is one that happened to me when I was a year and a half sober, and some of you have heard it. My husband, who was a college professor, we were to go to Israel. And he was taking a group of students. And so we went to Israel, and we were to be there for 6 weeks. And I was afraid to go because I was only a year and a half sober. And, you know, I didn't, I was using all kinds of tools, like if God were standing next to me, would I say or do what I'm going to say or do and everything. But my mind got all screwed up when I was there because I wasn't going to meetings. I started getting back my stinking thinking. And here we were at this beautiful Haifa University, and then we were traveling around taking the students on tours. I've been to Israel 3 times, and my second husband and I traveled a lot. I traveled through most of Europe and different countries. And I always, by the way, I always found AA meetings. And before I tell you the story, I have to tell you one more thing. This is really funny, because we were on a cruise 2 years ago, or it was last year, and two people came into the room. I started a meeting, because on all the cruises they have Friends of Bill Wilson, they have meetings. And so I was in a meeting that we started there. There were about maybe 10 or 12 people. And these two people walk in there, and they said, is this where Friends of Bill W. are, the meeting? Is that what this is? And I said, yes. And they said, you know, we keep going on cruises every year. And they said, we always wondered who these Friends of Bill Wilson are. So we came here because we want to meet him. And I said to them, I'm sorry to tell you this, but he's dead. And they said, so why are you here? I said, well, we're Alcoholics Anonymous. And they like flew out of the room. It was so funny. That we go on cruises every year because I love cruises, and we always go to those Friends of Bill W. We meet such wonderful people. And in all my travels, I've always gone to meetings, and we meet all kinds of people. So here we are in Jerusalem, and I'm looking for a meeting. And I'm with my oldest son, Craig. And Craig had a kidney pancreas transplant. He's still alive 15 years later. He's a real miracle in California. And because I was sober, you know, just like Kenny, I was able to be there with him and go through that with him. God bless him. I mean, God has really blessed him. He takes such good care of himself. And he lives in San Diego. Now I'm going to see him again. We're going on a cruise in January, so I'll see him then. I've gone on cruises with Joe and Charlie, by the way, too. They used to have cruises. They haven't anymore. Well, after Charlie died, and now Joe died, and then Charlie died recently, I think this last year. We're standing in Jerusalem, and I'm with Craig. We went ahead of the others, and I said, Craig, I have to find a meeting. I was getting really nasty with my family. I was getting impatient. I was getting lost, and whenever I get lost, I feel very insecure. And my thinking was just off. So here we are in Jerusalem, and we're looking all over for a meeting. We looked in the newspaper. We couldn't find one. This is in 1976, okay, 75 or 76. I was about a year and a half sober. We got a bunch of these little coins. They're called simanim, and we put it in the phone, and we start calling places. We called churches. We called synagogues. We started calling psychiatrists, social workers, and my son was on the line, and he would say to them, do you know where there's a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous? I'd found one in the International Directory, not a meeting, it was just a man's name, and I wrote to him and never heard back. And now, of course, there's lots of meetings there. We're calling and calling, and I'm standing there, and I'm thinking, you know, why am I not asking God for help? You know, so many times I'll be driving in the car and I'll talk to my higher power and ask him for help. I have a God chair next to my bed where I keep God. And I talk to him all the time. You know, you might think I'm nuts, but I'm doing it. And I asked him for a meeting. And I thought, no, I'm not supposed to ask him for something. Because when I'm praying, I'm supposed to just think about God. And so I said, please send somebody in my life, because he has done this before, to help me through this situation. Because it's happened through my whole sobriety. I am so conscious of it when God puts people in my life. And I know that they're meant to be there. So here we are, and I'm looking at all these people from every walk of life. There were all kinds of nationalities. I mean, everyone's in Jerusalem. It's one of the four holy cities in Israel. And then I looked around. I saw these beautiful mountains, and I thought, you know, how could there not be a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous? The enemy is all around them. There has to be somebody here who drinks, you know. And so I was asking God for help. And Craig said, I can't find anybody here who's going to do anything for us. But we have one more place we'll call, but we can't call it until Monday. And I said, what's that? And he said, the Ministry of Public Health. And I said, call them now. He said, it's Saturday, almost Saturday night, Mom. He says, they're going to be closed. I said, call anyway. And he called, and this was part of my miracle. A man answered, and he said, we're closed. And Craig said, don't hang up. He said, I want to know if you know of anyone who's an alcoholic or any meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the man said, you know, I know of somebody who stopped drinking. I don't know what she does. If you'll wait, I'll go get you her name. So he got us the name, and it was this lady called Myra who was in Tel Aviv. We were in Jerusalem. And he said, call her up. And I called her up, and she said to me, there is a meeting tonight in Jerusalem of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had just tears streaming down my it just was awesome that this woman said this. Myra held the flag in the international meetings we have every 5 years of Alcoholics Anonymous. She held the flag in one of those, I think it was about 15, 20 years ago, and she passed away from a heart attack. But anyway, she gave me the name of this woman named Ziva, who lived in Jerusalem. And I called up Ziva, and she says, you know, we weren't scheduled to have a meeting tonight. She said, I was on vacation, and there are only six of us. She said, I called it off, but she said, I don't know why, but I came back a day early. And she said, they're all here. Where are you? We'll come and pick you up. And we were staying at this beautiful King David Hotel, and I didn't know who was going to pick me up. I didn't even tell them what I looked like or anything. And here are these people at Saturday night. They're all dressed up, the women in these long gowns and stuff, and all the men are dressed up, and I'm standing in front of the hotel. And here comes this motorcycle. This guy with long hair and a beard. And he drives up right next to me. Do I look like an alcoholic? So I just looked at him, and I looked in his eyes. And you know those eyes. You see them here. You look in any of the people's eyes here, and especially the women. I mean, there's such a bonding between us. And he says to me, we're going to take you to a meeting, and I hated motorcycles. I never allowed my kids, boys, to have a motorcycle because I was always afraid of them. So he says, I have this sidecar. You can sit in the sidecar, and your son can get on my back, and we're going to the meeting. So here we are, going to this AA meeting, me. And I thought, oh, my God, if Father John could only see Ruth Arnoff on this motorcycle, if Jane could see me on this motorcycle. And so here we are. We get to the meeting, and there are these six people. And I said to them, I was so happy. It was just, the trip meant nothing to me because here I was with my people, you know. And I said, well, how about if we tell a little bit about our stories? And about three or four of them said that they can't stay sober, that they were in and out, and they said they really don't know anything about the steps, and could I help them? So we were to be another 3.5 weeks in Israel. And we were traveling all through Israel taking these students. And every night I would take a private, they're called a cheroot, it's like a taxi cab there, back to the meeting. And I said to these people, I really don't know that much about the big book and everything, but I'll teach you what I know and about the steps. And I did that for about 2 weeks. And, you know, we were on the plane coming home, and I said to everybody, or my husband and my kids, I said, you know, I said, it is such a miracle. I can't believe that this happened, because those people were there for me, and I was there for them. And I said, it dawned on me, that's how AA works, you know. We are all there for each other. And the miracle to me is the new person. And, you know, we're all miracles, and I don't think we should neglect each other. But I think that new person is so important. If you know me, I'm right there up to the new person whenever there is one. And that's how Dolly and I got to fight over this girl, this one woman, at the Sister Ignatia meeting. And Dolly says, well, I'm her sponsor. And I said, well, then I'll be her co-sponsor. And we were both fighting over this girl, and she never did make it. I don't know whatever happened to her. Dolly just grabbed her away from me. No, I'm kidding. So anyway, but But that's, you see the look, you know. And Roberta was telling us last night about that look of those people who come in, and most of them, they're looking down like this, and they're sitting in the back, and they're scared. They're scared. They're frightened. And, you know, all I have to say to them is, this is a program of love. Are you afraid of being loved? And a lot of them are. Don't kid yourself. A lot of people come in this program, they hate themselves so much, they don't even know what love is. But here we have unconditional love. That's the most beautiful part of this program. Anyway, that new person is important to me, and it's important to all of us. My mission in life, I guess, is, you know, this sponsoring thing. I love it. I heard at a program on TV, someone was saying this. I wrote it down. They said, one of the deep secrets of life is that all that is worth really doing is what we do for others. And I just love that. So I have something I want to say to you. This is to each of you. And I've got this also on the internet, and I love it. If God had a refrigerator, your picture would be on it. If he had a wallet, your photo would be in it. He sends you flowers every spring. He sends you sunrise every morning. Wherever you want to talk, he listens. He can live anywhere in the universe, but he chose your heart. Face it, friend, he is crazy about you. And I'll leave you with one other thing that they said in Rosary Hall every night before we went to bed. May the road rise to meet you, the prayer of St. Francis. May the wind be always at your back. May the sun shine warm upon your face and the rain fall soft upon your fields. And until we meet again, may God hold you in the palm of his hand. And if no one told you they love you today, let me tell you that. Thank you.